Hello, and welcome to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur, where Hayut Yogev speaks with entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs about reaching or missing the critical point of approaching the right customer with the right message at the right time and place, the point where business success starts. And here is your host, Hayut Yogev.
Reach or Miss, Episode 2. I'm very excited to introduce my guest today, Lou Kerner. Hey Lou, so happy to have you here with us.
Very nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Lou Kerner is a partner at Flight VC, where he spends 100% of his time investing in tech companies founded by Israelis as manager of the Israel Founders Syndicate on AngelList. Lou has a BA from UCLA and an MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Lou, I just reviewed what you have done until now. Please share with us what are you doing and most passionate about today, and where are you heading?
Sure. Well, I've been a VC now for over 5 years. And as I was investing, I started to get philanthropically involved with Israel, which opened my eyes to investing in Israel. And my first investment was about 4 years ago. And it was a virtuous circle. The more time I spent looking at opportunities in startups founded by Israelis, the more opportunity I saw. Till about 2 years ago, I decided to spend 100% of my time focused on investing in tech companies founded by Israelis, wherever they're located, whether it's Israel, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco. And that's what I'm incredibly passionate about today.
That's great. And what is going to be at the future? What are you planning?
I'm planning to grow the amount of money that I invest and the number of companies that I invest in. My plan is to do at least 10 investments in companies founded by Israelis this year.
Is there any specific reason you have chosen to focus only in Israeli-founded startups?
Sure. Well, you know, being a VC, I think to be successful, it's not only about identifying the great companies. That actually quite often is the easy thing to do, right? Everybody knows, for example, that Google's a great company or Facebook is a great company. But when you're investing in private companies, quite often the bigger challenge is certainly the more successful companies are the ones who are choosing which investors they want to get involved. And by focusing on tech companies founded by Israelis and building a brand around being helpful to Israeli founders, my belief is that the quality of the companies that I'm able to get on, you know, to invest in, you know, will be remarkably high.
It's very interesting. Can you say you are the biggest US-based investor that focuses only on Israeli startups today?
I'm not the largest in terms of dollars put to work in the ecosystem, but I'm really trying to do is build a brand as being most helpful to the ecosystem, both through the normal VC ways I've been around and I'm smart and have lots of contacts, but more importantly through the media, through blogging, conference calls, meetups and such, as well as helping the companies that I invest in grow here in the United States through a series of partnerships that I have with different entities that can be profoundly helpful to the companies.
This podcast is all about customer focus. Can you please tell us about your concept and beliefs of the way a startup or entrepreneurial business should approach its customers? And give our listeners your best advice for their customers' approach and focus.
Sure. I think at the end of the day, I have a simple way that I look at companies. I really focus on user engagement. I have a saying which is at companies, whether they're a B2B company or a B2C company, that customers are either becoming more engaged or they're dying. So I really think that the question that every company needs to figure out is how can they bring value to the customer such that the customer spends more time with their product today than they did yesterday. And I think that's really the only way to figure that out is by trying different things. You know, quite often success in companies is lightning in a bottle. You try something, and then, you know, somehow you try, you know, something that you try, people start using in ways that you didn't even imagine. And so, you know, I really think that successful companies are very good at not only coming up with really good ideas, but about implementing those ideas, testing those ideas, listening to the customers, watching how the customers respond, and iterating until they finally hit on that, you know, really successful product or feature.
You have seen a lot of startups and entrepreneurs. What is your biggest, most critical experience with customers' failure? The one that affected the most on your entrepreneurial journey?
Look, I think a simple failure, in my view, that really contradicts what I'm talking about. In my mind, it's all about not having an orthodoxy. You know, founders aren't right. The customer is right. And I think a classic failure in my mind is Twitter, in terms of their focus on 140 characters. That's what they allow their users. They max them out at 140 characters, and that's an orthodoxy. You know, if you want, I can give you the history of their orthodoxy. It's actually quite funny, as are all orthodoxies. But if you take a look at the Twitter of China, which is called Weibo, they actually copied Twitter's 140 character orthodoxy. But Weibo has much greater user engagement, mm-hmm. because 140 characters in Chinese is a short story. So, you know, in my mind, that's a classic case of a company not listening to their customers, not caring about their customers, thinking they have the right answer when in fact they don't.
Do you have your own case to tell about some wrong customer approach or something that you didn't choose right regarding the customers?
When I started my first company, I had, or so my second company that I was running called Bolt, which was a social network for 14-year-old girls. It had been started in 1997. The venture capitalists put $60 million into it. And then during the dark days of the internet in 2003, they kind of walked away. So I took it over with the original founder. And I had three great ideas about what 14-year-old kids wanted to do on the internet. So we built them and implemented them, mm-hmm. but it turned out that they weren't great ideas. And so it turned out that as a 40-year-old man at the time, I came to the realization I probably wasn't going to come up with the next great idea for what 14-year-old kids wanted to do on the internet. But it turned out that there were a lot of really smart 18 and 20-year-olds who were building great products for 14-year-olds. But they didn't have the opportunity to monetize them to the degree that my company, Bolt, could. So I spent the next 3 years talking to over 100 kids about buying their companies, and I did 8 acquisitions. So I think a lot of it is also you have to understand what your strengths are and how you go about finding great products for your customers. Sometimes you have to realize, in fact, you're not going to be the one to come up with those great ideas.
So what is your most important conclusion from this experience? What were the to-dos you chose to take from that case for the future?
Yeah, I think the way that you learn about customers is you do, and you watch how they respond, and you react, and you iterate. Again, you don't have any orthodoxies about what it is that you're doing. You know, at the end of the day, I think all this is an exercise in driving user engagement, because at the end of the day, user engagement drives everything else. User engagement drives more users to come to your site. User engagement drives revenue. It drives everything.
Can you somehow evaluate how much time and money have you invested in wrong customers or in startups that actually approach the wrong customers?
I think it's a common perception, I think, on all companies, particularly on the technology side. You know, you get a lot of great engineers, a lot of really smart technologists who build products without either understanding exactly the product market fit or without recognizing that, you know, they've built a feature instead of a company. I think those are kind of common mistakes that companies do.
Now tell us the story of the greatest, most significant success as a result of the right customer focus, or something you or one of your startups did right about approaching the customers.
One of the stories I like to talk about, and I was actually just telling this story with an investor yesterday. Every country has their own top-level domain. And there's a tiny little island nation in the South Pacific called Tuvalu. And they were blessed with the top-level domain .tv. And TV is TV in every language in the world. It's TV in China. And so we licensed it from the government, and we started selling .tv domain names. We started selling a lot of domain names. Things were going really well. And we started to think about, well, what else could our customers use?
Okay.
And we quickly came to the realization that the biggest thing that companies who buy domain names, .tv domain names, buy is other domain names. And so we started selling .com domain names and .edu, and we started selling a bunch of other domain names. And we actually started making some nice money selling those domain names. But, you know, this was in the early days of the internet, and there started to get competition in domain names and more competition, and prices dropped and more competition and prices dropped till finally we came to the realization that it was a race to the bottom. And even though our customers wanted this, we were struggling to make money doing it. And so we really de-emphasized it as part of our business. .tv ended up being a very successful company, but not nearly as successful as another company called GoDaddy. Because what I learned from that experience was that, you know, in a race to the bottom, somebody wins and can build a really big company by giving their customers what they want. In this case, what was really important was doing it incredibly efficiently and then selling a whole bunch of other products on top of it. And GoDaddy today is a multi-billion dollar company in the domain name industry.
What is your conclusion from this experience? What were the to-dos you took for the next step?
In my mind, it was a race to the bottom. And in retrospect, I think we could have won the race. I think we had a more talented team at the time. GoDaddy didn't really exist, or they were tiny at this time. And the mistake was there was a huge opportunity that we saw, but we didn't appreciate it for what it was. You know, I assumed a race to the bottom means that everybody loses. And in fact, in a race to the bottom, somebody wins and creates tremendous shareholder value for their investors.
Luke, can you recommend the best, most effective technological or digital tool that's related to customer focus, marketing, or sales?
Sure. Look, I'm kind of a broken record. It's really about having the data and looking at the data in the right way about how your users are engaging with your product. And it's really about how you get better. When I look at companies, you know, I look at, you know, not only, you know, customers who signed up in given cohorts. So, you know, month one, month two, month three, you know, the month one customers, are they growing their engagement over time? That's the first thing I look at. And then the second thing I look at is, you know, are the customers who are getting in month two spending more time in month two than the customers they got in month one in month two, if that makes sense. In other words, is the company getting better at driving engagement? Are they learning and iterating their product in such a way so that they get better? And so, you know, again, it's about how do you come up with ideas? How do you implement them? And then most importantly, how do you analyze the user's engagement with that new product or feature to see if you have something that customers love? Because at the end of the day, that's it. You know, from my perspective as an investor, I describe what I'm doing as looking for products that customers love.
Is there any specific thing that you are most fired up today? Any new products?
You know, I think that, you know, we're early still in everything. I think that, you know, every industry is still ripe for disruption. You know, we're now in what Steve Case, the founder of America Online, calls the third wave. So real quick, you know, the first wave when AOL was formed, you know, the second wave, and the what phase one was about was, you know, not only did you need to be a successful entrepreneur and have all those qualities, but because nothing existed on the internet, you needed to partner with other companies. So AOL needed to partner with content companies because there was no content on the internet, and they need to deal with regulators because there were no regulations. The successful companies in phase number two was companies like Airbnb and Uber that didn't partner with anybody and didn't need to care about regulations. They just did it. And the industries that could be disrupted by not caring about partnering and or regulations are now, have already been disrupted. There's still opportunity to create value, but, the really exciting thing is the biggest industries in the world, the education industry, the finance industry, the healthcare industry, the automobile industry, those industries are still incredibly early in their disruption. And so but the companies that succeed will again not only need to, do the normal things that entrepreneurs do, but they'll need to again, partner with other entities and deal with regulators. And in Israel, I'm very excited about all of the opportunities in mobility. One of my favorite investments is in VIA, which I really think is going to be the platform for transportation going forward. I think it's an amazing company. Obviously Mobileye is, a $10 billion market cap company. But there are lots of other companies that I've seen in Israel, I think, that can build big companies in that mobility ecosystem.
Before we say goodbye, I'll use the final question of whom I consider to be my aspiration and podcast guru, John Lee Dumas from EOFIRE. And I'll ask you for your last piece of guidance and what is the best way to connect with you?
I have tremendous respect for entrepreneurs, having started two companies myself. As an investor, I start with the fact that it's hard. I mean, it's hard for all entrepreneurs. And I think, certainly first-time entrepreneurs, I think, are almost always shocked by how hard it is. So, I think they should recognize when they go in how hard it is. But I also think that nobody knows a company as well as the founders of a company. And so, I know as an investor, I always go in and, I have my view on how things should get done. But I always tell the managers, the founders, that at the end of the day, they know their company better than their investors. They know their companies better than their mentors, and they should go out and get as much advice as they can, and they should all weigh it properly. But at the end of the day, they should do what they think is right, and they should make sure that they surround themselves by people who support that kind of ethos and who are there to support them. There are some investors who think, it's about them and their ideas. But at the end of the day, I've found, that I'm able to be most successful as an investor when I'm 100% supportive, of the entrepreneurs, and the entrepreneurs are the ones running the show.
I must say that I think it's quite a unique point of view, which I really like. I think a lot of investors find it very hard to let the entrepreneurs go, and I see it all the time from being aside and looking at a lot of startups. So I must say it's a great point of view.
I always say that there are an infinite number of ways to skin a cat, and I have seen some combative investors add values in ways that I couldn't, because that's not what I do. But I'm happy with the way that I do. And I think in terms of growing a brand, I think having a brand that stands for being supportive of the entrepreneurs is a great way, again, to get opportunities to invest in the best companies.
One of the most interesting lessons in marketing is looking at yourself as an investor, as somebody that wants to build his brand. I think it's beautiful. What's the best way to contact with you?
The best way to contact me, again, it's, it's at the margin, obviously as an investor, you get a lot of people reaching out. If possible, it's great to get an introduction from somebody else in the ecosystem that I've got a good relationship with, whether it's, other VCs, certainly, companies that I'm already invested in. When one of them tells me that, that they have a friend who's got a great idea and who's a great guy, being introduced by other people who I'm close to is certainly much better than reaching out cold. So that's what I suggest. And it also shows, I'm pretty well connected in the ecosystem there. So it shouldn't be too hard to find somebody who I'm connected to.
That's great. And Lou, I would like to thank you very much. It has been a great pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Rich or Miss listeners, we'd love to hear your thoughts about this podcast or any questions you would like to ask Lou about. Until next time, it all goes down to this. You either reach or miss. keep reaching your goals and visions. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur. You can find all the information, links, and resources that was mentioned at the show in our website, reachormiss.com. See you next week.